Hello, everyone. I'm glad you're enjoying the book, Jackie and Me. And I know you're enjoying it because I have so many listeners for this book from around the world. So welcome back. This is chapters 7 and 8. Chapter 7, The New Bat Boy. I woke to the gentle sound of Jackie Jr. screaming his head off. Once the Robinsons calmed him down, we shared some cornflakes together and looked at the newspaper. The game wouldn't start until 2 o'clock, but Jackie wanted to get out to the ballpark early. Mrs. Robinson picked up Jackie Jr. and walked us outside. It was a cold, cloudy day. "You should have brought a jacket," Mrs. Robinson told me. "Moms, they're all the same." "I'll come out to the ballpark as soon as he wakes up from his nap," Mrs. Robinson said as she kissed Jackie goodbye. "You're going to be great, Jack." "I know," he replied, gesturing toward me. "The kid already told me." Jackie didn't have a car. We walked to the nearest subway stop. Jackie went through his pockets and came up with a couple of nickels. 5 cents for a ride. Not bad. He gave me a nickel, and we pushed our way through the turnstile. The train wasn't crowded. There were about a dozen people sitting around us, most of them white. I didn't want to get into any trouble, so I tried not to make eye contact with anybody. A few people were staring at Jackie as he looked at a newspaper. I wasn't sure if it was because he was black or because they knew he was one of the Dodgers. He was nervous, he told me. He had played second base for the Montreal Royals in the minor leagues, but the Dodgers needed help at first and asked him to play that position. It would be a learning experience. We had been on the subway for about 15 minutes when Jackie told me we would be getting off at the next stop. The train screeched to a halt, and when the doors opened, I could see a sign that said Prospect Park Botanical Gardens. When we got out of the subway, Ebbets Field was nowhere in sight. The street sign said Empire. Jackie knew where to go, and I followed. We walked down Empire for a couple of blocks until we reached Bedford Avenue. We made a left at that corner. I looked up and saw the sign, Ebbets Field. There it was, the mythical baseball shrine. It had been torn down long ago, I knew, but it existed for me. I was standing outside it. My heart beat faster. There was a gas station across the street from the ballpark and an automobile dealership next to it. They were selling DeSotos, a kind of car that I had never heard of. There were no fans at the ballpark yet. Jackie led me through the center field gate. We walked up a long ramp, which ended with a small opening. When we reached the opening, I could see the field for the first time. New York had been a lot of concrete so far, so the overwhelming greenness of the field took me by surprise. It was a beautiful sight. The ballpark actually seemed smaller than what I was expecting. The seats were really close to the field, so close that parts of the upper deck hung out over the playing field. Fans could look right down on the players. The outfield walls were completely covered with advertising signs. Van Heusen shirts, Ever Ready shaving brushes, Bulova watches, Lifebuoy soap, Botany ties, Guy products. A skinny horizontal sign read, "Hit sign, win suit." It looked like an impossible shot. The sign was only about 4 feet high and low to the ground, right behind where the right fielder would be positioned. The Gem Razor and Esquire boot polish signs were against the right field grass and leaning back slightly. The enormous scoreboard with a big Schaefer Beer sign on it stuck out about 5 feet into right center field. Playing the outfield with all those crazy angles must be a nightmare, I thought. Jackie and I walked through a door marked Clubhouse, Players Only. The Dodger locker room was a big rectangular room with a line of windows close to the ceiling. It was hot in there, and I didn't think it was because the air conditioning hadn't been turned on yet. The place had no air conditioning. Lockers, each about the size of a phone booth, lined the walls. A clean uniform hung in each one. I scanned the names above the lockers. Pee Wee Reese, Carl Ferrillo, Dixie Walker, Pete Reiser, Cookie Lavaghetto, Al Gianfrido. I knew these names from reading baseball books and hearing old stories. Jackie found his locker. While he put on his uniform with the big 42 on its back, I took a walk around. When I walked into the trainer's room, I was surprised to see a white kid about my age in there. He had his feet up on the massage table, and he was reading a magazine called Amazing Stories. The kid was wearing a Dodgers uniform. "What do you want?" he asked brusquely. "Nothing," I replied. "You the new bat boy?" I certainly wasn't the new bat boy, but he obviously did not know that. And if the Dodgers needed a bat boy, well, I figured I can do that as well as anybody else. It could be kind of cool to be the bat boy for the Brooklyn Dodgers. "Yeah," I said, doing my best to look like I was telling the truth. "Well, is you or is you ain't?" "I is," I said more assertively. "I mean, I am. I'm the new bat boy." "I'm Anthony," the kid said. He didn't offer his hand, so I didn't put mine out. "Call me Ant. Everybody does." "Joe," I said. "Joe Stoshak." "What's a colored boy doing with a Polack name?" "I don't know. My folks gave it to me." I didn't like the Polack crack, but I had promised Mom I'd be on my best behavior, so I didn't slug him.
"How come you don't talk colored?"
"I talk the way I talk." Ant looked me over, sizing me up. Usually when I meet new kids, they give me the benefit of the doubt. They don't hate me or like me yet, but they check me out to see if I'm okay. This Ant, I could tell, didn't like me the second he set eyes on me. I had been careful to wear a plain old t-shirt and blue jeans so it wouldn't be obvious that I came from the future, but Ant was pretty observant.
"Where'd you get them dumb sneakers?" he asked.
I looked at my feet, then at Ant's. I was wearing a pair of Nikes, the cheapest ones they make. There was nothing fancy about them. I mean, they weren't Air Jordans or anything. But I guess my sneakers looked strange to Ant. He was wearing black canvas high tops. Their label said Keds.
"I wore out my Keds," I said. "These are new."
Ant took a uniform out of the closet and tossed it to me. It was heavy, much heavier than my Little League uniform. It must have been made of wool or flannel. The word Dodgers stretched across the chest, with the D-O on one side of the buttons and D-G-E-R-S on the other. I turned the uniform over to see what number I had been given. I was hoping for something in the 40s, like Jackie. But across the back of the uniform was the word Bat Boy. Ant led me back to the main clubhouse and pointed at the locker where I was supposed to change my clothes and stash my stuff. Jackie was sitting and reading some letters in front of his locker in the other corner. As Ant walked away, he mumbled under his breath, "I can't believe I gotta work with a nit." I had heard the word before, but never directed toward me. The N-word, most people in my time call it. I knew it was about the worst word you could say to an African-American, though it never really meant much to me. Now I felt angry and humiliated. Ant had already called me a Polack, and now he was giving me the N-word. The blood rushed to my face. Ant was on the other side of the clubhouse now, about to go into the trainer's room. I went after him. I was going to bust his face in. I would have, too, but Jackie jumped up from his stool and grabbed me. Ant disappeared into the trainer's room. "I'm going to kill him," I seethed.
"No, you're not," Jackie said calmly.
"He called me a nit."
I couldn't even say the word.
"What? You've never heard that word before?"
Jackie burned his eyes into mine and poked a finger at my chest.
There will be no incidents. Do you hear me? I made a promise to Mr. Ricky when he signed me. He said, guys are going to say awful things to me. Guys are going to do awful things to me. They're going to try to provoke me into fights. If I lose my temper and cause a riot or something, it will be 10, maybe 20 years before another Negro gets this chance. Understand? I didn't. Not entirely. Did Mr. Ricky want a ball player who was afraid to fight back? I asked. No, Jackie said. He wanted a ball player with guts enough not to fight back. Jackie went back to his mail and I put my uniform on. I stood in front of the mirror and looked at myself. The shirt was big on me, floppy all over. But so was Jackie's. That's just the way they wore them in 1947, I guess. I still looked great, like a Dodger. I was perfecting my batting stance in the mirror when I noticed Ant behind me. You ain't no playa, he said, pointing a finger at me. Let's get something straight. You're here to serve the players. You're just a bat boy. I'm your boss. From now on, I want you to call me Batman. Batman? I asked. I couldn't help but laugh. Yeah, Batman, he replied. What's so funny about that? Nothing, I lied. At least he didn't insist on calling me Robin. Let's get to work, Ant said, hauling out some big boxes marked Spalding. He opened the boxes, and I could see there were hundreds of baseballs inside. What do we do with them, Batman? I asked. What do you think we do with them? He said, handing me a pen and a piece of paper. This is Gianfrido's signature. Copy it. And remember, 2 D's in Gianfrido. I looked at the piece of paper. It said L, Gianfrido, on it in smooth, flowing letters. The Bat Boys autographed the balls? I asked Ant incredulously. He looked at me as if I was stupid. Well, don't you think Al Gianfrido has better things to do with his time than to sit around signing baseballs? Ant left again. I sat down at the table, picked up a ball, and began to write Al Gianfrido. I had never done this before. It's hard to write on a baseball, I realized right away. Al Gianfrido. There isn't a lot of room between the seams. Al Gianfrido. Worse, I was used to writing on a flat surface, so when I got to the Frido part and the ball curved down, my hand didn't move down with it. Al Gianfrido. I kept messing up and fuming at Ant. He probably gave me the Gianfrido baseballs because it was one of the longest names on the team. Al Gianfrido. I remembered the name. In one of my baseball books back home, it said he was a little-known utility outfielder who became famous after he made one of the most spectacular catches in baseball history. Al Gianfrido. I was doing my best to control myself when another white kid walked into the clubhouse. I'm the new bat boy, the kid said. The position has already been filled, I informed him. But over the phone, somebody told me. Try again next season, I suggested. The kid left, dejectedly. After I wrote Al Gianfrido about a zillion times, my hand felt like a claw. As I was finishing up the last Gianfrido's, Jackie sauntered by and looked over my shoulder. Nice handwriting, he chuckled. He said he was going to go out on the field and stretch a little. I felt like plunging my hand into ice water, but Ant showed up again. We got out the bats and balls, put clean towels in each locker, and soap and shampoo in the showers. What about the batting helmets? I asked Ant. Batting helmets? He looked at me curiously. They didn't have batting helmets in 1947. Where do you come from, Mars? Ant asked with a mocking tone in his voice. Sorry, I said. You're pretty stupid, aren't you, boy? No, I replied. I didn't think that telling him I got all A's and one B on my last report card would do a lot of good. Oh, yeah? He challenged. Can you read, boy? Can you spell cat? C-A-T, I said. Hey, you're a regular genius. I bet you're so dumb you don't even know who the president is.
The
president? My mind raced. We learned all the presidents in school. I knew that the president during World War II was Franklin Roosevelt, but the war ended in 1945, and this was 1947. I scrambled to think of the presidents who followed Roosevelt. I wasn't sure of the order. Kennedy, Reagan, Nixon, Ford, Johnson, Bush, Eisenhower, Carter, Clinton, Truman, I guessed.
Had to think about it, didn't you? Aunt smirked. You are stupid.
At least I got the answer right. I breathed a sigh of relief. Aunt looked like he was getting ready to humiliate me some more, but the Dodgers started drifting into the clubhouse.
Hey, Pee-wee, Aunt shouted cheerily. Dixie, Scooge, we gonna go all the way this year?
Aunt knew all the players, and they all greeted him warmly. Everybody ignored me. I guess they were used to African Americans doing things for them, so a black bat boy wasn't any big deal. Aunt didn't make any move to introduce me to anybody. I just went about my business, doing the chores he told me to do. The clubhouse chatter was loud, funny, and dirty. I don't think I ever heard so many four-letter words before. The Dodgers seemed to be a really loose team, like one big happy family. Jackie came in from the door leading to the dugout. Suddenly, all conversation stopped. I was pretty sure the other Dodgers had been introduced to Jackie during spring training, but maybe the reality of seeing him in their locker room on opening day threw them. Everybody stared at Jackie like he was an intruder. The silence was oppressive.
Gentlemen, Jackie finally cleared his throat and announced, as long as I have your attention, it seems like this would be a good time to make a short statement. Some of you may not like me because I'm a Negro. You certainly have the right to feel that way. I'm not concerned with your liking or disliking me. All I ask is that you respect me as a human being. Regardless of how you feel about me, I hope we can work together on the field. Thank you.
The players went back to their conversations, but more quietly. Some whispered among themselves. Nobody came over to talk to Jackie, and he didn't approach any of them. I didn't know if the Dodgers felt the same way I did, but to me, tension was hanging over the clubhouse like a dark cloud. They no longer looked like a team. They looked like strangers getting ready for work. I scanned the clubhouse while I swept the floor. Pee-wee Reese, the shortstop, was a little guy, but he looked like he was one of the team leaders. Carl Farrillo, an outfielder, looked very serious. He was quietly rubbing something. It looked like a big bone, over the barrel of his bat, over and over again. Hugh Casey, one of the relief pitchers, took a quick swig from a bottle of whiskey and then stashed it in his locker behind some other stuff. An old white guy with glasses was sitting on top of a trunk, sipping a Coke. I didn't know who he was, so I walked over to Jackie and asked him if somebody should kick the guy out of the clubhouse. That wouldn't be such a good idea, he replied, chuckling. He's the manager of the team, Barney Shotton. Dixie Walker, another outfielder, was sitting on a stool in front of his locker, writing on a pad of paper. It must be a letter to his mother or his wife, I guessed. My dad had a Dixie Walker baseball card in his collection, so I knew a little about him. He was a great hitter, that was for sure. He led the National League with a .357 average in 1944. Dixie's dad and his uncle both played in the big leagues before him, and his younger brother, Harry, was a star for the St. Louis Cardinals. Dixie finished what he was writing, and he walked over to Hugh Casey's locker. Walker whispered something to Casey, showed him the pad of paper, and handed him the pen. Casey read what was written on the paper and signed it. Whatever Dixie wrote on the paper, it wasn't a letter to his mom. I was curious. Walker then went over to Bobby Bragan, who was strapping on some catcher's gear. Bragan listened to what Dixie had to say, and he signed the paper too. It must be some kind of a petition or something.
I gathered. Next, Dixie came over to Eddie Stanky's locker. Stanky, I knew, played second base for the Dodgers. When Dixie handed him the pen to sign, Stanky shook his head no and walked away. That was odd. As players were starting to file out of the clubhouse to warm up on the field, Pee-wee Reese approached Dixie and asked to see the pad. Dixie handed it to him, and Reese read it. He looked at Walker, said a few words, and then he tore off the top sheet of paper and ripped it in half. Reese threw the two pieces in a trash can and walked out of the clubhouse. I was dying to know what was on the paper. I waited until all the players had left the clubhouse, and then I reached into the trash and fished it out. This is what it said. We, the undersigned players of the Brooklyn Dodgers, agree that we wish to be traded rather than take the field with a colored man on our team. Underneath that, there were the signatures of Dixie Walker, Bobby Bregan, and a few other players. I thought about saving the paper for my collection of baseball memorabilia back home. Those autographs would be worth a lot of money someday. But I decided they were guys I didn't want to have in my collection. I crumpled up the paper and tossed it back in the trash. Chapter 8, Ebbets Field. The delicious smell of roasted peanuts hit me as soon as I walked out on the field. Fans were entering the ballpark now, the early birds who loved the game so much they had to watch batting practice. Aunt told me we didn't have much to do until the game started, so I should just hang around and get the players anything they might need. The tickets for forthcoming games will be sold in the Marble Rotunda, boomed the public address announcer. All the Dodgers were playing catch, loosening up their arms. I was close enough to see the sweat on their faces. They seemed to throw the ball so effortlessly and so accurately. Baseballs were exploding into gloves with a wonderful popping noise, like firecrackers set off one after the other. "Hey, Stosh, warm me up." It was Jackie, standing around looking uncomfortable. While each of the other Dodgers was playing catch with a teammate, nobody invited Jackie to join them. My throwing hand was killing me from signing Algie and Frito's name on all those baseballs, but I wasn't about to turn down the chance to play catch with Jackie Robinson. He flipped me a glove, and I dashed out near the third baseline. The glove, I noticed, was much smaller than the one I had at home. It had hardly any padding or webbing. Jackie whipped the ball to me. I had played a lot of baseball in my life, but with kids. Jackie's throw came at me so fast, I was afraid it was going to hit me in the head. Awkwardly, I stuck the glove in front of my face just in time. The ball smacked into the palm of my hand. It must have been some kind of involuntary response, but tears gathered in my eyes. My hand hurt so much, I thought it was going to come off at the wrist. Now, both of my hands were killing me. I didn't want anyone to know the pain I was in, so I pretended it didn't hurt. I reared back and threw the ball to Jackie as hard as I could. The ball went sailing over his head. Jackie laughed and chased it down. "Easy," he yelled, "nice and easy." After a few throws, I got used to how hard Jackie threw. Some kids along the left field stands were watching us, and I felt like turning around and shouting at them, "Hey, losers, I bet you wish you were me. I'm playing catch with Jackie Robinson." I discovered that if I moved my hand backwards slightly at the moment the ball hit my glove, it cushioned the impact a little. But even so, when Jackie told me he was going to go run a few wind sprints in the outfield, it was a relief. My hand was throbbing, but otherwise I felt great. I couldn't wait to tell my dad about it. "A little boy has been found lost," the public address announcer informed the crowd. The stands were filling up as game time approached. There was the sound of a cowbell clanging. When I looked to see where it was coming from,
I spotted a fat lady with stringy gray hair swinging the cowbell over her head.
"Home was never like this, Mac,"
she shouted in a raspy voice that could be heard all over the ballpark.
"Butterfly girl in section 23,
Eddie Stanky announced. All the Dodgers turned around to peer up into the stands.
"What's a butterfly girl?" I asked.
"A butterfly girl," Stanky informed me, "is a girl who's so pretty that just looking at her gives you butterflies."
In the first base stands, a bunch of guys with a tuba, saxophone, and other musical instruments were playing. They sounded terrible, but nobody seemed to mind. It said Dodgers Symphony Band on their bass drum. When the three umpires came out on the field, the band launched into three blind mice. Everybody laughed, including the umps. There was no Dodger mascot. Nobody was paid to dress up like a chicken and entertain the fans. The fans entertained themselves. The public address announcer boomed,
"Will the fans along the outfield railing please remove their clothing?"
There was scattered laughter. I wasn't sure if it was a joke or not, but the people sitting along the outfield fence did take their coats off the railing. Most of the Dodgers went out along the first base line to shake hands, sign autographs, and chat with the fans. Jackie, hesitant, lingered near the dugout. He was scanning the crowd, looking for his wife, I guessed. Hundreds of African-American fans gathered around him. They looked different from the white fans. It wasn't just skin color. They had a look in their eyes. Worship, some of them. Pride, others. Just plain old happiness, in some cases. The men were dressed in suits and ties. The women were wearing fancy dresses and jewelry. They had dressed up like they were going to church. An old man kept shaking his head back and forth. He must have never thought the day would come when an African American would be a part of what was always called the national pastime. Dozens of people gathered around, handing Jackie things for him to sign. I saw a little black boy hand Jackie a scorecard. The kid was so awestruck, he couldn't even get the words out to ask for an autograph. He just stared with his mouth open, like Jackie was a god or something. The Braves took the field to warm up, and the Dodgers gathered in the dugout. Jackie sat in the corner by himself. I was going to go sit next to him, but Dixie Walker motioned me over to him.
"Hey, kid,"
he said, pulling a dollar out of his pocket and handing it to me.
"Go get me a hot dog, will ya? Everything on it."
I took the bill and went up into the stands until I found a hot dog vendor. He was taking care of a lady with a baby. When she turned around, I recognized her. "Mrs. Robinson," I said. "Jackie took a long nap," she said, shifting Jackie Jr. from one hip to the other. "And then I couldn't find a cab driver who would stop and pick us up." "You need me to help you get a hot dog?" I asked.
"No, I hate hot dogs," she replied.
The hot dog vendor reached into his cart with his tongs and pulled out a baby bottle.
"That should be warm enough," he told her.
She thanked the vendor and gave the bottle to Jackie Jr. "I'm glad to see they put you to work," Mrs. Robinson said before going to her seat. "Joe, after the game, I need to talk to you about something." I fished the dollar out of my pocket and ordered a hot dog with everything on it. I was afraid a dollar wouldn't be enough, but the vendor gave me the dog and handed me 90 cents. I rushed back to the dugout. When I gave Dixie Walker the hot dog and the change, he handed the change back to me. That's a 90-cent tip on a 10-cent hot dog, I figured. Not bad. Maybe Dixie wasn't such a terrible guy after all.
"Mr. Walker," I said, "can I ask you a question?"
"Sure, kid."
"What do you have against Jackie Robinson?"
Dixie looked at me. Then he looked around, as if he didn't want everyone to hear what he was about to say.
"Son," he said, lowering his voice, "I got nothing against Robinson or any of you Negroes. You gotta understand, though, I come from Alabama, and where I come from,
A pig and a chicken don't live in the same pen. They kill each other. You keep everything separate and everyone's happy. That's just the way nature works. That's the way it's always been. That's the way it should be. Same thing with white folks and you Negroes. It's nothing personal, mind you.
I certainly didn't agree, but I wasn't in a position to argue with him. Both teams were starting to line up on the foul lines. A microphone was brought out to home plate, and a bunch of guys in army uniforms gathered around it.
Oh, say can you see?
The players quickly removed their caps and held them over their hearts. Jackie was standing next to Bobby Bragan and a pitcher named Kirby Higby, but when they realized it, they moved a few feet away from him. That left Carl Ferrillo closer to Jackie, and he moved away too. I couldn't take my eyes off Jackie. I felt sure he was going to raise a fist in the air, or spit, or perform some act of defiance. He didn't. His act of defiance was just being there. He stood off to the side, solemnly, alone, while the rest of the Dodgers stood together as a unit.
O'er the land of the free!